the water would have to come up like 100 feet to get to us.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so.
But it looks bad on the map, so that's why we're always on the flood zone, because we're right by.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, well, so what do you think? We're going to do this Ravisi thing, huh?
That sounds good, yeah. I've got a lot of information about it. Good. We can go wherever.
No, I thought you'd do a little prep, and I read some of the chapter one. Boy, my head exploded just reading chapter one. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, chapter one goes into the acid and alkaline and a little bit of the hierarchy or how the levels go. And then chapter two goes more into how the levels go and just a little about the duality of the acid alkaline. So basically one and two. And after that, then it gets complicated. Then your head starts exploding.
Then it gets complicated. Have you read the whole thing?
Yeah, my copy is so well underlined. I was looking for another copy. And finally, my friend Elliot Yamamoto out of wherever he is now, Texas. No, Arizona. He sent me his copy, which was very kind of him. So now I have two copies of the book. Plus, I don't use it much because thanks to that crazy pharmacist, the copy is so good with the search function. You know, wow, I can find anything I want.
Yeah, well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, that search thing is good, isn't it? Yeah.
They really, in a yellow and green, you put two words, you get one word in yellow, one in green. I've never seen that before. That's pretty cool.
Okay, well, let's do this thing. We're going on the air now, so don't say poop. So here we go.
From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, I think we should do the theme song. Okay, a very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone. It's a new week. Another day in paradise here in Dripping Springs, Texas, wherever you are. Welcome. Hope you're having a nice morning. Boy, sun's coming up. Going to be a kind of a warmy day here. We've had a really mild winter thus far, knock on wood. Always like they don't say these things out loud, you know what happens. But so we'll see. Let's see, Jennifer Daniels is going to be here tomorrow, the fourth Tuesday. Andrew Gost on the 23rd, and Ray Pete's going to be here on Thursday. And Ann Bergstrom's here today, which is the third Monday. Adam's now on the first and the third. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. This is Adam 2.0.
Adam 2.0. That's right. This is 1.0 is the first Monday, and the Adam 2.0. How you doing, kid?
Super groovalistic, prosopunksticacious.
Really? Hey, I thought if you'd like, I never talked to you about this. It's just kind of popped in my head, but why not? Do you want to kind of co-host the thing with Ray Pete on Thursday with me?
Wow. Wow, that would be cool.
Would you want to do that? Yeah, and you could ask some questions, because I know you've studied a lot of his stuff, and you could ask some fun questions. You want to do that?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, we're big fans of him. He knows a lot of stuff. We don't do his diet because Coca-Cola and aspirin and things like that are out of my province, but he really does know a lot of things.
Cool. Why don't you make a few notes of something you'd like to talk to him about, and come on, because I think he's going to be on the phone and you're going to do it on Skype, so we can have a three-way and just have fun.
Boy, that's cool. Yeah. That is great.
Yeah, we'll do that. That's Thursday, 10 o'clock Central, which would be 8 o'clock in Montecito time. We thought we'd do a little fun thing on Manuel Ravisi this morning. Andrew knows a lot of stuff about him, and Sharon put the link to his book, which is on the Crazy Pharmacist, and you know, I was reading some of chapter one, and man, by the time I got through homotropic and heterotrophic forces in the atom, fulfillment of quantum electrolytic forces and quantum electric, man, my head exploded already. You know, I don't. And he's got how many chapters in this book?
Yeah, let's see. I'm not sure how many chapters. It's 776 pages all told.
Really? So yeah, we're going to do this and we'll kick around. You know, we have a lot of things we can talk about, and we always do with Adam 2.0. It says January the 21st. I think this is Martin Luther. This is some kind of a holiday. I think Martin Luther King.
It is.
Day.
MLK Day.
MLK Day. So the banks and stuff are closed. And so you bankers are probably listening. So this is Adam Bergstrom. He, a good friend, and Adam's been around the sun, 75 times, you say, 75?
77, Sunset Strip.
77 times? Jeez, holy, you just keep going. 77, and he is an amazing researcher, and he's got two sites, SunSync Nutrition, which is $99 a year, I mean, for the rest of your life, $99 a lifetime, and then where he has all his e-books, which is solartiming.com. He does a blog every couple of days on One Radio Network, and he's here on the first and the third Monday, and we're proud to have him here. And he's talked often of a fellow by the name of Emmanuel Ribisi. Is it Manuel?
Emmanuel.
Oh, Emmanuel, Emmanuel.
Isn't there a biblical Emmanuel, something like that?
Yeah,
hallelujah.
Hallelujah, yeah. And I think the whole name is, let's see if I got the name here, Research in Physiopathology as Basis for Guided Chemotherapy, with special application to cancer. Emmanuel Ribisi, MD, when he wrote the book, I guess he was scientific director, applied biology, New York, chief of oncology. Wow. So he's a real cancer guy. And I think this book is... has the date, what, Adam, 1961?
1961, and he's got other information, but it's not being released. I would love to see all the things that happened between 1961 and the time that he went on cosmic vacation in 1998.
Oh, you mean, so after 61, all this stuff about cancer got him into, is that the conjecture that he kind of got into problems with the boys?
Oh, yes, he did. Definitely. He got in trouble. They took his license away. He had Trafalgar Hospital, an entire hospital,
right,
which
yeah.
is now running under another name, with 28 researchers, including Lawrence Lashon, the famous psychological disease man on cancer.
Really? And so, I mean, he was really deep in the bowels of more mainstream cancer stuff, and he wrote all this stuff about, you know, and in the foreword, he talks very clearly about how what chemo, Adam, and surgery are just not going to get it. And I guess that's what got him into trouble.
Well, his chemo is a lot different. There are no patents on any of his drugs. I think there was one that he did patent at one time. But basically, it was cheap medicine. And so the boys who brought him to the United States in the first place, I believe the Chicago Medical School, when he started to differ from them, because there's more money to be made on genetics, then they basically took his license away, which he got back at the age of 100, about a year before he left the planet.
Is that right?
He had a lot of supporters, too. He had a lot of politicians. They went to him on the sly, a lot of health food people. He helped. He was especially good at brain cancers, gliomas, and other things of that nature. So he was having success. Now, if you go on Wikipedia, go on Ribisi's Guided Chemotherapy, all they have to do is say bad things about him. And the interesting thing is they have him dying at 1997. So I was talking to a dead man when I talked to him on the phone, I guess, if Wikipedia is correct.
Oh, I need to get some water. Tell folks about Ribisi. I need to go downstairs and get some water.
Okie dokie. Emmanuel Ribisi was born in 1896, and he made a lot of money early on in making special aviation oils. Hitler was after him, so he hid out. He was hid out by the French resistance, and he found ways to stop their bleeding very quickly by understanding how acid and alkalines work. So because Hitler was after him, he left for Mexico, and he was smuggled out. And at great risk to his life, he had secret, what do you call them, microtapes, I guess. That's not the word. But anyway, he smuggled information about the war to Mexico, which he got to the United States, opened a hospital in Mexico. He was so successful with cancer therapy that the University of Chicago brought him in. And basically, they pumped his brain and stole a lot of his things.
What do you mean they pumped his brain? Like physically pumped?
They got a bicycle pump out and pumped his brain. No, they
just downloaded his stuff.
Stole his stuff. They got his information, and then they figured ways to patent it. Like Oncogenes was his idea under another name, and a Norwegian team got the Nobel Prize for Oncogenes. And actually, a lot of our cancer research today, including the omega-3 oils and all of that, is his information. Only with omega-3s, he had a warning that they had a dark side. Well, when the supplement industry got a hold of omega-3s, they just told people the good side and sold it and didn't go into the opposite side of what Ribisi talked about. Uh-huh. But he's one. The reason we have omega-3s in the first place is basically Ribisi.
Did he think like omega-3s were a really good thing for the body, but just the processed stuff was a problem, or what? What was his whole take on the threes?
No, it caused aging, but there was a way to back off cancer by using them for therapies. So he wasn't really a fan of fatty acids or omega-3s or so-called essential fatty acids. And I don't know if he thought that they were essential or not. They're not essential, which is something that Ray Peet has written about extensively. But anyway, they can be used for therapy. You know, there's a saying, anything can cause anything, and anything can cure anything. So,
yes,
well, maybe, guys, so that's my rule.
Yes, so it's probably not a, what do you think? I mean, it's probably not a black and white thing where if you take omega-3s, you're actually aging the body. I guess it just depends on what kind you take and how much and how long. And I don't know, you know, maybe, I know that there's some people that have really come out of some pretty sicknesses doing fish oils. You know, there's a lot of stories about that. It's crazy.
Lots of stories. One of the problems with that, of course, is placebo.
Yeah, and, sure.
You know, placebo is an abused word. Placebo is used to mean that you think you're well, but you're not well. But you think you're well and your pain goes away. But actually, I'm not sure what you would call it. But many, many times there are healings, like of genetic diseases, incurable diseases. I urge every listener to go and look up Dr. Albert Mason. And particularly, there's a story on the internet called The Hypnotist and the Warts. And basically, Dr. Albert Mason cured an incurable disease, described as one of the most disgusting diseases on the planet, which is fish scale disease. The man skin was completely like fish scales and oozing. And he thought it was warts. And because he thought it was warts, he healed the boy. Huh. And it's a well-documented case, occurred in February of 1951, when I was 10 revs around the sun in the fifth grade. But he got so much flack about curing him that he decided that hypnosis was madness shared by two. And so anyway, he gave it up because the hypnotist needs to be hypnotized too, apparently. In other words, because he thought it was warts, he healed the boy. But once he knew about fish scale disease, anyone who came to him with fish scale disease after that, he couldn't heal because he knew it was incurable.
I'll be
but when didn't know it was incurable. Now, I did the same thing one time for, with the wrist, I can't even think of the name of it. It's supposed to be incurable, and I cured it. Then after that, I had more trouble with it after that because I found out it was incurable. And now doctors are back around the other way. They say that it is not incurable.
Sharon put up an old video of Emmanuel Ribisi. It's called The Treatment He Used to Cure Cancer. I have not seen that one. She put that up last night. You might take a look at that after the show. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do that this morning. Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com or 888-663-6386. So what was Ribisi, when he put it in this book, what was is it simple enough to do his basic premise about cancer cells that got the medical model people in such a frenzy over it and took away his license?
Well, most cancer research, I bet 90%, has the idea that cancer has something to do with genetics. And genetics is a small part of it, because cancer in the gene effect, people get it maybe 50 times a day, and then it gets healed. So Ribisi and a certain amount of the cancer industry back at the time knew that it was a whole body disease, that genetics were not involved. But there's a lot of money in genes because you can patent them. They're not going to study something they can't patent or make money off of. So all the money goes into genes, and meanwhile, genes doesn't have anything to do with it. In fact, a lot of circadian rhythms, when you hear people talk about genes and timing and the time gene and then the clock gene and all that stuff, it's nonsense. There's no such thing. And anyone can see by researching that red blood cells can be timed by light and by food and by exercise. But if you look at a red blood cell, it has no genes. It doesn't even have mitochondria. It's like a wave, like a lifesaver almost, you know. It's a disc, and it has no genes. So how the heck does it get timed? And that was a deliberate decision by Cold Springs Harbor Laboratory in New York, where they decided that they were going to dump the whole circadian idea of the whole body circadian model and the cancer model and everything, because there's more money in genes.
So when Ribisi's talking about this whole body thing, did he have conjectures or theories of, was he on the whole lifestyle, environmental factors back then 50 years ago, or what was he, did he come up with the what he thought were the causes?
Well, he saw there were multiple causes, and usually the causes met in the middle. And what I mean by that is, if you get a sarcoma or a cancer, a lymphoma or one of those type of diseases, you can tell clearly that it comes from without. And if you get a carcinoma, it comes from within. And most cancers are in between. In other words, a parasite can cause it, and an environmental chemical can cause it, and a genetic mutation can cause it. And usually a cancer is a combination of a gene being tweaked and then something from the outside meeting it. And depending on where it meets, that's where you fight it. Huh. It can be at the fourth level of the periodic table, which is the cell itself. It can be at the third level of the periodic table, which is the outside the cell, is where the problem's going to be.
So,
and usually the further up the periodic table it gets from the mitochondria to the cell to the outside of the cell, the more serious it gets. And once it gets into the blood, it's usually fatal.
So when you say, Adam, a gene being tweaked, so it's not the gene itself that we come in with mom or dad. It's just there are genes, and these genes get corrupted by environmental factor.
Well, there's a whole, or even below that, because genes are dependent on something called proteomics. And once proteomics was invented, it proved that it was the Trojan horse that basically destroyed the genome project. If you have a level below the gene controlling the gene, How helpful is that? It's like saying, when they say the genes cause cancer, it's like saying a hammer built a house. Well, what about the carpenter? What about the wood? You know, they forgot all about the other things that make a house, the wood, the cement, the blueprint, and the builder who wields the hammer. So here you have a hammer, and they blame the hammer for building the house.
So he, in this book, he was trying to explain the different factors, how they come together.
Right. He knew, like, say you have the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
And you blame the caliber of bullet that killed Kennedy. Okay. So then you get rid of all the bullets, and now there's going to be no more assassinations if you get rid of that caliber of bullet. It's ridiculous. You know, the bullet did obviously kill the president, but that wasn't the force behind it.
Sure.
The trick is to find the force behind it. That's the same with glyphosate, by the way. They're looking for the caliber of bullet that killed Robert Kennedy versus John Kennedy. There are so many calibers of bullets and cannons and bazookas and everything else that it makes it ridiculous to go after one chemical. And Ravisi knew that.
So, So what are some of the things that he proposed in the book that were this force behind it?
Well, he knew we had two forces, and basically he called it anabolic and catabolic, which is well known in medicine. And basically, a catabolic force is usually an alkaline force, and anabolic force is acidic. So if I'm a bodybuilder, to build muscle, it's an anabolic effect. But when I'm at the gym, it's a catabolic effect. I break down my muscle tissue while I'm working out so I can supercompensate and build muscle at night when I sleep. So an acidic state, when we're asleep, builds muscle, and then we get up and break it down to build it up even more. Obviously, the deeper we can rest, almost to a coma state, is the more muscle we're going to build, because the building state is while we're sleeping, not while we're working out.
So, what was his whole theory and writings about the acid and alkaline compared to the way we approach him today?
Well, number one, when people go and measure their acid alkalinity in their urine or their saliva, they're measuring what's outside of their body. And furthermore, what gets acid and alkaline is the point of attack, where the disease is. If it's a stomach ulcer, or if it's a pancreatic problem, or whatever, it's that spot. Now, the body is so well buffered for acid and alkaline that in the blood alone, if you deviate by just a fraction, you die. One way, you die by tetany. You basically spasm to death. And the other way is coma, and you just die by being unconscious. Now, the area that's affected, however, is where the problem is, because the body obviously has to keep living, so it's only the place under attack, and he knew that. That's why he measured acid alkalinity with a Beckman pH meter, which was the ideal way to approach it. And he knew, this is the really interesting thing that nobody seems to get except for VC. And this includes Ray Pete, but maybe he does. Maybe we can ask him that.
Okay.
Cancer will grow in an acidic state, just like all those alkaline books, you know, that's alkalize or die,
sure.
Say.
Mm-hmm.
But it spreads in an alkaline state. So obviously, when you get cancer, it's not the time to go on an alkaline diet. It's to prevent cancer, you want to be on an alkaline diet and eat all those wonderful green vegetables and fruits. But once you get it, you better think about it, what you're going to eat. You might want to go out and eat some meat, which is exactly what they often tell you not to do.
Really? You know, yeah, I wonder, so Ravisi, he knew this with the cancer cells?
Oh, yeah. And he knew it in detail, and he validated it over and over and over in the laboratory. Remember, at Trafalgar alone, he had 28 researchers, and he was no slouch in Germany. He escaped Hitler because Hitler wanted him to invent all these new aviation fuels, because he had already done that. He was held. He was hidden out by the French resistance. Smuggled microfilms into Mexico at great risk to his life. Found therapies to stop the bleeding of the resistance fighters before he left. And then when he got to Mexico and started his own hospital, the boys at the Beaker boys at University of Chicago wanted his information, so they brought him in and basically, again, pumped his brain, however they did it. They basically found a lot of his secrets and then used the ones they wanted to make money on and got rid of the others. And then when he started the hospital in New York, they attacked him, took away his license, and he had his license gone for, I think, 20 or 30 years, so he finally got it back. A bunch of politicians who had been helped on the sly help get him his license back at the end.
And what did they use as an excuse to take away his license? I guess they always just come up with something.
Oh, yeah, the excuse is in Wikipedia. It's an ineffective therapy. Yet, one time, if you went to, what's the famous cancer center there in Houston? The very famous one that I'm spacing out on.
Yeah, I know which one you mean, yeah.
You know what I mean. It begins with an M. Anyway, they had on their site four contributions toward cancer that were done by Ravisi that were correct. One was selenium. He was the first one that used selenium for cancer. The second was basically the acid alkaline one. And two others, which I have to think about. Oh, the oncogene, which they admitted that he came up with 30 years before the Norwegian team won the Nobel Prize for it.
What's an oncogene? An oncogene.
Oncogene is basically a way of targeting the cancer through what they call the gene. And actually, Ravisi's method is based on lipids. In other words, fatty acids versus sterols. So we have cholesterol is one of the sterols versus omega-3s on the other side. They both are therapeutic as medicines. Now, as medicines is not meaning a food. An omega-3 is not a good food, but it can be used as a medicine at certain stages of cancer, diabetes, whatever disease in the book. One thing, if you're over alkaline, you get diarrhea. If you're over acidic, you get constipation. And if you're cold, you tend to get diarrhea. In fact, every time we laugh here, it's been cold in California lately, I go down to put a light in my car to keep the pack rat at bay, because I have a pack rat that wants to eat my car.
Okay.
I have a light on there all night. But every time I go down and it's colder, I come running up and say, clear the way, and go and poop, because it makes me go to the bathroom by being cold. Warm tends to constipate you. So a person that has diarrhea, this is practical Ravisi information, wants to stay warm, and a person who has constipation wants to experience cold. You can do the Wim Hof method.
Adam Bergstrom's here, and if you care to join the show, we're doing a little stuff on Ravisi, but we can take all kinds of questions and comments here this morning. Adam 2.0 is on the third Monday of the month. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Dr. Jennifer Daniels will be here tomorrow. I have a little turpentine story I'll be sharing with you tomorrow on Dr. Jennifer Daniels' show. I've been playing around with it of late, and it's kind of fun and interesting. It may be. Let's see. My goodness. You know, that might be one of the reasons. Adam, I wonder if that's one of the reasons why I was going to talk a little bit about the aloe, that aloe tends to, loosen the bowels, tend more towards loose bowels, of course, than constipation because of its cold nature.
It is an alkalizer, definitely.
It's an alkalizer? So it alkalizes.
Strangely enough, it drops your immunity. Now, why would you want to do that?
Yeah,
that's because of autoimmune diseases. And you'll find that many of your nighttime foods are drop your immunity, because that's when people are more likely to experience allergy. A person who has a true allergy will be affected at 10:30 at night. That will be the worst crisis part according to circadian rhythms.
Really?
10:30. And I have a friend that he can tell time by his allergies. He's got an allergy so bad that, I won't go into all the protections he has to take for his allergy. And it's, of course, the cedar fever allergy you have there in Austin.
Yeah, we got a lot of that. Yeah.
That's a lot of people. And it's anyway, it's a bad allergy.
If you'd like to try some of the Aloe Wand, it's just a great product. It's a fresh frozen, and they ship it two 1.5 gallons is the minimum. You can click right on the front page of One Radio Network and try some, and just a lot of remarkable things. And I love it. I do a lot of it, and it's been very, very comforting and soothing and healing for my whole gastroenterology thing. Turns out I probably came in with a little gastro karma. I had a lot of grandpa and mom and aunts and uncles that had all kinds of gastro things. So it was probably some kind of little karmic thing. You know, I came in with little gastro sensitivities. And that's how it happens. You know, we often will do that from a whole spiritual karmic thing. And it's kind of fun. So this is a great product. If you'd like to try it, just click an order right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. Stockton Aloe Wand. Have you ever wondered why elk velvet antler could be good for you?
So every year they shed it, and then in the spring they begin growing a new rack, a new set of antlers. 3 months. They grow it in three months. Think about the biggest moose rack you've ever seen, the biggest elk rack or deer rack you've ever seen. That's 3 months of growth.
It's amazing.
Now, so what you have is this organ that starts off as nothing and grows within 3 months to be an organ that's covered in skin, hair, veins, arteries, nerves. It's totally innervated. It's got bone and osseous tissue and bone marrow. It's essentially a limb. It requires special molecules like growth factors to accelerate the growth of it. And so there's growth factors in there that grow all the types of tissue that are found on it. Bone marrow, nerves, skin, blood, all of that is being grown by these growth factors, and you can put that into your own blood and help yourself regenerate tissue.
Well, that's why we use it around here. You can click and order Elk Velvet Antler from Daniel Vitalis or Thrival, any Sir Thrival link right here on OneRadioNetwork.com. Adam, I love this product. What would be the best time? I guess would be midday because it's a meat thing or on the elk velvet?
That would actually be morning.
Really?
Because the antler's part of the body.
Oh, it's the morning part of the body?
Yeah, but you could take it in the middle of the day. It's kind of, some things have kind of a looser circadian rhythm than others, so you could take it at midday too. Nighttime would probably not be the best time to take it.
And then pine pollen, I guess, would be morning too, because that's a big tree, pollen trees, right?
Definitely morning. A lot of therapy things come out of there, like pine nuts and pollen, etc.
Yeah. So I like to do the pine pollen and the elk. What's that?
Turpentine is even a pine tree.
Yeah, that's a pine tree too. I think that'd be a morning thing too. Yeah. I like to do the elk velvet and the pine pollen together in the morning. Put them both in there, and so that's good. Yeah, that's kind of fun. If you'd like to try this elk velvet and pine pollen, I think it's a kind of a great thing that you could do for Mr. Testosterone and everybody south of the border there. And I've really enjoyed taking it over the years. It's probably one of the most consistent products, the elk velvet I've taken since knowing Daniel, which has been 10 years now. Wow, can you imagine? Any of these to Thrival, like, check out his products. He has some digestive bitters, a vitamin K2 thing, shaga, reishi, and myron glass. What else? Colostrum, of course, and then the elk velvet and the pine pollen. And I don't know if he's got anything else. Oh, yeah, and the taboo, you know, the aphrodisiac kind of thing. Here's one of our faves that we're going to order again today if you want some. Previously on our show, we talked to the now legendary Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt, and he mentioned sulfur. He's a fan.
The conditions in our world and our environment are changing so dramatically that people need to have a whole host of self-help tools and methods and I'm very thrilled about your version of MSM. It's a right way to go. You know, sulfur is is part of most of the detox enzymes and the critical part that is right now we have a much, much higher need of healthy sulfur than we had even 10 years ago. And so I followed your work a little bit, you know, that you're on the right track with what you are promoting.
Well, Dr. Klinghart, we've heard from thousands of people over the year how they really love this product. You can click and order our Pure Sulfur, three prices, United States, Canada, and worldwide, right here, or email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, for a discount for more than £4. Pure Sulfur, one of the few places where you can get this product, oneradionetwork.com. And Thomas Cowan, we're big fans of Thomas Cowan, the Heart is Not a Pump fellow, and he's been writing some curious things on his little blog that I get about sulfur, and he likes the sulfur combination with workouts before and after, and he says it really helps him to not have, you know, achy bones and muscles and stuff like that. He uses sulfur with Shizandra and Shilajit. Pretty cool. Shizandra you can get at on Shen Blossom, if you'd like to add that with your sulfur in the morning. And Shilajit you can get a lot of different places on the interweb. I think for Herbs Forever, Forever Herbs got a nice encapsulated one that I've used, and you can really feel it. I like it. But there's all kinds of different ones, but just know the source. We don't really offer any through here, but Dr. Cowan talks about the idea of you know, improving, as I said, the workout experience, and he talks about the oxidation, preventing oxidation of cholesterol, and Dr. Seneff writes about that, and you don't want to oxidize that cholesterol because it gets all oxidized, and so sulfur helps with that, and the detox pathways is Dr. Klinghart. So if you'd like to try some, we have a pure sulfur, and you can just click an order on oneradionetwork.com. If you want more than £4, just email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, and I'll give you a discount.
Know the source on One Radio Network.
Kind of do a little special thing, and we can go wherever you'd like to go. It doesn't need to be focused on Ravisi, but we'll play around with his ideas for as long as it feels comfortable. And we got some fun things to learn from this fellow who is obviously way ahead of his game, Emmanuel Ravisi. He wrote a book in 1961 that's on crazypharmacist.com, and you can get the book. And they also have a pretty cool finder thing on there, don't they, Adam? And you can actually look up words in there.
They really do. Yeah, it's really handy. I use it all the time. I have two copies of the book. And by the way, if you want to buy the book, it's over $600 for the book.
Are you kidding me?
You want to know why? Because the medical profession was instructed, the publisher, to burn all the copies that were left. 10,000 were sold out of 50,000, and the remainder was burned. Now, usually, you can get some money by remaindering a book at the bookstores for a discount price. They were ordered by the pharmaceutical companies to burn 40,000 copies of that. And I have that personally from Ravisi, who told it to a friend of mine who went to him for AIDS therapy, which he was also way ahead of the curve on.
Uh-huh. So what was it really, the thrust of it, that got him into so much trouble? Was it just his feeling that the surgery and the chemo stuff was not going very far, and that's what they were doing all their research on?
His cancer therapy worked, and theirs didn't. That's what got him in
trouble. Let's
talk
a little bit about
in trouble.
Well, talk about some of his therapy, and what did he do? I mean, he did it on people, and he was getting results.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of testimonials by major health food people, Dr. Robert Atkins, and et cetera, et cetera. A list of them. Gary Null. Gary Null's father went to a Ravisi, and guess who helped get him out of get his license back? Bill Clinton, Charles Rangel, a whole bunch of politicians were there. A lot of them unnamed, who remain unnamed, they got his license back because he had personally done work. And we don't know, that work is secret because we don't know who it is. Just like Edgar Casey, you know, worked on the Rockefellers and two presidents and stuff. You don't get to hear those kind of names out there. Maybe eventually those names will be revealed. Again, a long time between 1961, when the book was published, burned, etc. He republished it in a, what do you call it, one of those binder, spiral binder type versions. That's the first copy that I got. And then it got burned because it was originally in a hardback medical copy.
And so people would go to him at this, what was the name of the place, Trafalgar?
Trafalgar Hospital, big working hospital.
And they would go and just spend a long time with him, or how did his whole therapy work?
No, a short time. In fact, sometimes they could just leave because most of his drugs were not patented drugs. They were just simple chemicals. Sometimes it would be like baking soda or something, depending on the case. And see, baking soda will alkalize the growing of a cancer. However, if you're at a spreading stage, if you have a metastasizable cancer, then you're in trouble with baking soda because you spread it. And that includes breast cancer and prostate cancer, for instance. But if you have a uterine cancer, you could get away with baking soda with no problem because it does grow, but it doesn't metastasize regularly. Some cancers metastasize by Air Force and some by infantry. The infantry ones you can get away with using alkaline therapies on. But once it goes by Air Force, like your liver cancer goes to your lungs and every place else and your bone and things like that, then you're in big trouble if you alkalize.
So Ravisi was actually really digging deep into the atomical structure, you know, the atoms and all of this thing, and looking at patients real specifically and doing treatments that weren't, patentable drugs, and they could have been, like you say, for baking soda. And he was really getting success with that.
He found the building block of reality, which is not the gene, it is the atom. And then he built up from that. So the atom was only at the seventh, the very bottom level of the building of the periodic table of the elements. And cancer's action happened in the upper stories, not the lower stories. However, because it was built in sequence by the atom, he knew that the real problem with cancer was in the organelle level of the body, that's the mitochondria and the nucleus, etc. And it was in the cell, and then it was in the interstitial fluids, like the lymph and places like that. And cancers that went into the lymph that started there mostly were not coming from genetics. They were coming from atomic radiation, from EMF, something like that, some kind of outer force. The ones that were carcinomas were coming from below. The ones that were sarcomas were a little higher up, and lymphomas and cancers like that were more readily going to be from outside. So he had a way of telling where the cancer was coming from.
Wow.
They still knew about that. It's from a parasite. It's from radiation. It's from the gene. And actually, he could tell where the cancer was coming from and then attack it at its source. And that was the, in every disease, like take cholesterol. He knew that cholesterol is supposed to be in the cell. It's not supposed to be in the interstitial fluids or in the blood. So all he did was have a therapy where it knocked it back to the proper level. It's supposed to be on the fourth level of the periodic table of the elements, not in the third level. And then he found out, was it oxidized or not? Well, if you were over alkaline, you were going to oxidize that cholesterol, and you were over acid, you were going to over acidify it, over nitronize it. So he could tell the suite you were on. Say you were on the fourth floor. Well, are you on the iron suite? Are you on the nickel suite? What suite are you on in that level? And what element specifically was involved, either missing or too much of, in the body?
So how would he, in patients where the cholesterol was ending up where it shouldn't, what would he do?
Well, he would knock it back to that that section by giving a medicine, usually, or a food that would make it behave and go back to the level it was supposed to be on. And those were done with specific therapies to know where it was going to be. And that has a lot to do with the timing that you eat the food. He knew about that. He knew, like, for instance, we are the most acidic at 4 o'clock in the morning. Now, this is for a person who has normal, you know, sleeps at night and is awake during the day. But even if they don't, there is a tide that tends to do that. So he knew that if a person had a pain early in the morning, it was because they were over acidic. They became too acidic. If they had a pain at 4 in the afternoon, they were over alkaline. That's why the best way to deal with pain at 4 in the morning is carbon dioxide. Breathe in a paper bag, do buteyko breathing, something like that. But that's not going to work for you if you're at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, for instance.
Oh, so the buteyko breathing, that makes us more alkaline, right?
Yes, you can actually have a heart attack by doing buteyko breathing in the afternoon, late afternoon. But it can save your life in the morning, because if you're going to have a heart attack, you want more carbon dioxide. One way, have a sugar cube. A buddy of mine from grammar school, before he gets up to go to the bathroom in the early morning, he just simply has a sugar cube beside his bed and takes it. Now, you can do the health food version. You know, you can have honey, you can have maple syrup, you can have a little chocolate snack or something like that. But it can save a lot of people's lives by simply getting that carbon dioxide from simple sugar. They could even have a Coca-Cola, I suppose, and have a sip of Coca-Cola if they wanted to.
Yeah. So
I have my Coca-Cola when I drink it, which has been a long time. I would have it at midday, but it has its value for certain things. And for people who don't eat on time, simply acidifying or alkalizing in numerous ways, there's numerous ways to do it, can save a person's life.
Hold on a sec. Hey, Doodle, over there, did you come back? Did you? Well, you're such a good girl. What are you doing? Were you out playing? Say hi to Adam. Say hi, Adam.
Hi, Doodle.
Hi, everybody. You're a good girl. All right. You lay down now. She was out playing, and she always comes up here to tell me she's home. Good girl. You're a good girl. Adam Bergstrom, Patrick Timpone, and Doodle, our trusted sage here at our side on One Radio Network.com. Wow, what a fascinating life this fellow had with the whole Hitler thing and doing all this work and then getting kicked out. And wow, what did he do between the 61 and he got, what was he doing all that time? You know, after he got kicked out.
Full of various diseases, and cancer was his speciality. That's why the title of his book has "With Special Application to Cancer."
Right.
The book is mostly about cancer, but he worked on all kinds of things. Here's one practical thing he did, and this was validated by ear, nose, and throat specialists, and you don't hear this in Wikipedia. He found that if you get beginning deafness and find out the acid alkalinity quotient of it, there's a whole chapter of this in the book, that you can stop deafness, that you can keep a person from going deaf indefinitely.
Huh.
Work that deaf in there as a pun, you notice.
Yeah. What was his overall take and advice or guidelines on just basic diet? I mean, what kind of things did you get out of the book about that?
Balance. Now, here's an interesting thing. Vitamin A and vitamin D, found out that they were alkaline. They over-alkalinized you when you took large amounts.
Mm-hmm.
K and E over-acidified you. But vitamins are not meant to be taken in large amounts unless they're used as medicine. If you take the correct amount of a nutrient, it's not going to acidify or alkalize because there's no residue. The residue comes when it becomes systemic, gets loose, and then the body has to deal with it. So if you have too much of a vitamin or mineral or whatever, and it can't be used, guess what? You excrete it, either in your urine or the feces. And when you hear all these supplement people talking about better absorption, well, the body, basically it's tricking the body's defense. The body says, I don't want any more. I had enough to eat. Oh, no, no, no. We're going to make you have more of this iron, whether you like it or not. And so they have all these ways to make it more absorbable. And actually, the body's trying to resist it. So it becomes a battle between the body's defenses against the vitamin. Let's take phytates. They say don't eat phytates because they block all your vitamins and minerals. Well, that's how they fight cancer. You go to the health food store and buy it under another name, IP6, and now it cures cancer. Well, how does it do it? By denying you those vitamins, those extra vitamins you're taking. So you can get too much or too little. People always think, especially in the United States, you know, more must be better. If this much is correct, then I will just double the dose and I'll be twice as long.
All right, right, right. It's just not like, you know, it's funny. I buy the Intramax, you know, which is the whole vitamin spectrum with Drucker Labs, all food-based and organic. Pretty cool stuff. But, you know, I find that I only take it, I don't know, maybe one or two times a week or three times. You know, it's like, it's really intuitive. So if I would take, or other people would take, like an Intramax or another really good vitamin, what we think is a good one, would the body know what it needs, in your opinion, and excrete out the rest, or could it be a problem if you take too much?
Usually it does. Now, if you take...
Usually it excretes what you don't need?
Usually it does, because it doesn't need it. Now, the excretion can give you diarrhea, and sometimes it can give you constipation, whether you have too much of it. So, but usually, if you have a variety of foods, the body can take care of it at that point. But when people get medicines, medicines can make you very, very, very acidic or very, very, very alkaline. That's where people get into trouble, when they get into acetaminophen and cortisol and those kind of drugs. Get people into serious trouble.
Same way with minerals. Do we excrete if we get too many or too much, whatever?
Yes, we do. And now Ribisi found basically what's the Rosetta Stone of acid alkalinity, that if you look at the periodic table, everything in the first column ends up acidic in your body, and everything in the second one ends up alkaline. And in the third column, alkaline, and in the fourth one, acidic. And there's mathematical reasons for that. I believe I put it in one of my blogs, explained how that was all figured out by Ribisi. In other words, Ribisi looked for patterns. He didn't just go and take it tree by tree in the forest. He looked at the ecology of the forest and said, what makes this forest grow? Why do some trees grow faster than others? And that's basically the periodic table of the elements. So if you look at the traditional acid alkaline, you'll find like sulfur actually alkalizes. But if you look at the traditional books, they'll claim it acidifies. But Ribisi was interested in what it would do in the long run. So a lot of times you will get, for instance, a robbery involves the mugger. But when the police show up, that's often considered the acid alkaline. Like, they blame the police for the mugging because they always show up, right? And that's where Ribisi went past that and found out who is the true criminal. What's going on here? Like, when cholesterol shows up, the doctor said that's the bad guy. Well, the cholesterol was there because it's one of the most healing agents we have in our body. If a person is going to is in an automobile accident or is under surgery, eat all the cholesterol you can, because it always over-alkalinizes you to be in emotional stress, surgical stress, or any kind of accident stress. You're overly alkalized. And that's why cholesterol has been shown. And he's demonstrated many times that you could give cholesterol to a rat and put it in water and it would swim for a day, while the one that wasn't giving cholesterol would die very quickly.
So Cowan and other people have talked about the oxidation of cholesterol being a problem. What's going on there? And that Cowan says that the sulfur helps. What happens when we oxidize, our cholesterol gets oxidized?
We're over alkaline.
We're over alkalized.
Obviously, it can stick to various places.
Yeah.
Now, what makes it oxidize? Fatty acids. If you analyze the plaque, you're going to find a lot of omega 3s because it is the longer chain the lipid is, the more toxic it becomes. And by the way, Ravisi found this interesting difference between aging and cancer. Cancer is overusing, and aging is overaging. And strangely enough, as a youth to about 10 years old or a little older, we over-acidify, and we need it to build. But at middle age, we over-alkalize. And then, as we get really old, into 90s and even the 80s, we start to over-acidify again. But we acidify in the wrong places often. But that's why an older person starts to get childish because they become over-acidic.
Hmm. So when the cholesterol is, say, maybe trying to patch up inflammation or potential tears in the arteries, that's what it's supposed to do, right? It's supposed to do that?
But then the fatty acids get in there and sabotage it, because if you take apart the plaque, guess what you're going to find? Omega-3s, a DHA, EPA, all of the very things they say are healthy for us. That's what builds it up.
Well, that's not good. So that's another argument not to take the fish oils then, huh?
That's right. Yep.
I'll be
or flax oil or a lot of the CBD oils. Now, CBD oil isn't as bad. I think it's a waste of money because we saw it at the local store here. It's $178 for a 2 ounce bottle. Well, there's easier ways to get some of the elements that are in that oil, I think.
Sure.
I eat food.
Yeah, sure. So the omega-3s, though, they're in, what about the omega-3s we just kind of get in fish and stuff like that? Isn't that good stuff or not?
Unfortunately, they age people. That's why you don't find long-lived people that eat fish. And of course, people are going to say, well, what about the Okinawans? Well, they don't eat fish. Now, why would people on an island not eat fish? Why would the Irish eat potatoes instead of fish? Why would the potatoes be eaten in New Zealand by the Maoris? And now some societies who had to survive on it, they had nothing left, then they would eat it. But even on Easter Island, when they ran out of food, they were eating more seagulls than they were eating fish. They ate seagulls, and rats was the primary part of their diet.
So you overall, you think like chicken and turkey and beef, buffalo, whatever, is even for a lot of people a more healthier choice than fish?
Yes, no, maybe. Again, it depends if you're over acid or alkaline, over acid, because chicken can over acidify you. And that's why they have so many viruses in them. A virus, this is another thing Ravisi discovered, a virus survives under an acidic condition and a bacteria in a over-alkaline condition. So during the flu season, you would simply not be too warm, because that's why people tend to get flus during the flu season. Usually viruses are most deadly in the summer. Polio, all those diseases coming out of the jungle, that's all warmth. But what happens is, why in the winter do they get the flus? Because they go into an overheated house, and then they go out and in back and forth, and then they get the virus.
Boy, this year is an ongoing, I guess, an argument for, I don't know, what do you think? I mean, what's the right way to say it? Just for us more and more just to try a wide variety of foods overall, if you can eat fish maybe a little bit once or so a week, or I don't know, you know what I'm saying, or a little bit of meat, or a little bit of this, a little bit of that, rather than go in one direction. Is that fair?
As Donald Lay put it, a little bit is medicine and a lot is toxic and abuse. That was his terms about how much we take. So if you take a small amount of anything, the body can process it. But when we take large amounts, it can't. And that includes when people are taking vitamins and minerals, they're taking large amounts. They're usually not available like that in nature. Or when people drink overly large amounts of water. You know, if you watch an animal, they drink when they're thirsty. They don't force water down their body, which is one way to overalkalize yourself very quickly is by drinking a lot of water. And if a person has a cancer and they drink a lot of water, they're in serious trouble. Now, if they drink a lot of water and they have a growing cancer that's not spreading, or want to prevent cancer, then a little extra water can be helpful.
Alex has a question for you. Does Adam know if Ravisi used mega doses of vitamin C in any way of his work?
He didn't, because strangely enough, vitamin C was neutral. Vitamin C and coffee actually end up neutral, because that's why they get into the bladder. Now, he might have, I never heard of him doing this, but you could use it for bladder cancer, because on the way out, it would acidify you, obviously. But it was one of the few foods that didn't make you acid in overdoses and didn't make you alkaline. It was neutral.
Coffee?
And the same with coffee.
I'll be done.
And by the way, even I read on that crazy pharmacist site, and he actually has some wrong information on the site about coffee, about the acids in coffee and things like that. I posted something on the site about that, that when they talk about acids in coffee, it is an industry term. It has nothing to do with pH or acid base. It has to do with the pop, I think they call it sometimes in coffee. You get the pop or the taste, and it has nothing to do with acid alkaline. In fact, there's more acids in an apple than there are in a coffee, if you analyze it, and much more in like malic acid in various other foods. But it just was used, an unfortunate term, to confuse people, because almost nobody knows that coffee actually is a neutral substance when it comes out. It will acidify again your – no, it won't. It will sometimes alkalize your urine, because remember, caffeine is an alkaloid. It's not an acid. It's a powerful alkaloid. So when you do take caffeine, then you definitely do alkalize yourself if you take it in a pill form, or it's added extra to like a Coca-Cola or a Mountain Dew or whatever they add it to.
Pretty fast. Yeah, you've recently done several blogs on the whole acid alk. Didn't I see that on your blogs, acid alk coffee?
I definitely have. There's an acid alkaline blog I just did recently. It's called Acid Alkaline Food List, and I posted it on Adam's blog at 12:04. And that gives a lot of the foods and how they acidify and alkalize. And so you can just look at that chart and go from there.
Here's a good question. George says, whenever I have problems with stomach or anything in the pain area, it's generally in 11, 12, 1, 2 a.m. Does that tell me anything about the acid or the alkaline component here?
It can. Usually about that time, if you start getting pains like that, then it involves the gallbladder and the liver, and can definitely be from over-acidity. It can also be some people, the way they eat, will actually over-alkalize stem cells when they should be acidifying. And so suspect hormones, suspect serotonin, nitric oxide, cortisol, of course, and a few chemicals like that. They can be over-alkalize you. Just because you have a pain at night isn't always means you're over-acidic, but it usually does. And one way to balance that out is simply go take a sweetener or something salty. Salty or sweet. Actually, salt is a cancer preventative because it helps us absorb magnesium. If you can have a tiny bit of magnesium, and as long as you take salt with it, it will be absorbed deeper into the body. Something else that Ravisi would do, you would take certain things to allow another chemical to not hang out in the lymph when it was supposed to be into the cell. Now, where is sulfur supposed to be? And Sulfur Man has said this over and over. It goes to the lymph. And that's exactly right. If you look at Ravisi's chart, sulfur, as well as magnesium, are in the lymph system on the third level of the periodic table of the elements.
So that's why sulfur has been known, and people talk about it, the detoxification properties of it, because it's in the lymph?
Yes, it's very powerful. Ravisi used it in his therapy, and it works in the lymph. If you want to work in the cell, you need sulfur stepchild. That's selenium. That works inside the cell. And by the way, for these levels that I talk about, besides the acid alkaline food list on 12.4, to understand a little about the levels, I wrote three other blogs more recently, Mud of the Earth's Crust, 11.5, Water and the Third Period, 11.14, and Biological Real Estate, 11.12. Those are the most recent blogs written on the levels that Ravisi talked about, the hierarchy. Hierarchy means one guy in charge of the next guy. And our body actually works like that. You have certain levels that are in charge of other areas, other levels.
That's amazing. Stay right there. Adam Bergstrom, Patrick Timpone. Boy, I've been really interesting. What a fascinating fellow. If you have questions about anything at all, your life, who's going to win at the 24th race at Hialeah? Well, no, we don't do those kind of questions or something. It is patrick@oneradionetwork.com or 888-663-6386. And again, the email is patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Ken Rolla has some really cool things that you might want to look at. He is going to be here. Let's see, we are up now on the 4th. Yeah, so he'll be here next Monday, the 4th Monday. We kind of changed him around because we wanted to put Adam 1 and 3. And if you look on the scalar energy device on the front page, you'll see that golden pyramid. And Ken makes these things, and these are really nice. I think you'd enjoy having one in your bedroom. A lot of people, I think it's just nice. I could feel it when I first plugged it in my studio. It was kind of amazing. And this is a whole interesting kind of scalar thing that he created. It's called a golden pyramid, the rest shield. You could put one of these little babies in your bedroom, and they just have a little light on the top if you want to have it, or just turn that off. And it's a very nice thing to have around your bed. And, you know, we need all the support we can to help us sleep with the goodness knows what's coming in from everywhere. He also has the water structuring device, and you'll see that if you click on the golden pyramid. And this is very cool. I use mine a lot, probably twice a day. Holds about a half a gallon, and you can put it in there, and we put our little Living Streams probiotics in there, the Probies, and we'll put, pretty much that. Sometimes the minerals, we'll do the minerals and the probiotics for Doodle and I. We both drink. And this structures up the water, helps to get into the cells more readily, which is kind of fun. So water structuring, the scalar energy rest shield. And also if you scroll down, Ken has the home shield. This is a pretty sophisticated, cool thing that you put outside in your yard. And it does things that Ken can't even talk about. Otherwise, they knock on his door. And it's run by a little solar panel. You might want to check it out if you're really into doing some pretty fun, silly things around your house. It would, Ken says, very much help you to protect your home from all different kinds of things. It's called the Home Shield. And then he's got these Ormosite holy hand grenades. And these are little plates that you can put your water on or sit on. These are just great products from Ken Rolla. Right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. Previously, with a longtime friend, Phil Wilson, the exclusive distributor of the Relax Far Infrared Sauna.
I've been sweating and promoting the benefits of saunas and sweating for 16 years now. Can you believe it?
Wow, 16 years. Regularly that long?
20 minutes a day for about 15 years now.
6 months ago, man, I started doing it every day, and I don't think I've missed a day. How this has improved my life, I mean, I can't tell you. It's pretty amazing. I tell you what, I feel better and better. What's going on?
Well, the proof is definitely in the pudding. And if a person would go to YouTube and search for Relax Sauna Testimonials, they'll get 650 testimonies on what the Relax Sauna has done for different individuals, from feeling better to getting rid of extreme pain to getting rid of neuropathy to just helping a person feel more calm, alert, relaxed, tuned in, and everything else.
And everything else. These are really lovely units, extremely low EMFs. Email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, and I'll give you a deal on this sauna. We also have an option to get a relaxed heat lamp, but We'll work it out together. Email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Previously with Brandon Amalani of Shen Blossom, talking about our very special ginseng.
And you don't want something that's been corrupted coming into your body. Like the ginseng is a super important example of that. You know, when you're using aggressive alcohols and solvents, it has a strange effect with ginseng, in the sense that when you're not only over processing it, but putting it in really aggressive alcohols, what's going to happen is that you're going to flip the chemistry on some of the androgenic. Naturally, it's androgenic. It's going to basically protect the telomeres and add life to the body and protect the genetic replication of the cells. But it's also going to boost the androgens and boost the male hormones in the body. But if you incubate it in really aggressive alcohol, it flips those to become estrogenic. Now, estrogens, phytoestrogens, are not necessarily bad in balance, but you really don't want that with your ginseng, especially if you're getting like a really high quality, a really old root, something that's very special. You want to like treat it with care and make sure it's delivering what ginseng has to offer.
Just a short clip from Brandon talking about the way they do the ginseng, just to give you a better idea of where this company is coming from, the quality and the ethics. Brandon and the Shen Blossom link on OneRadioNetwork.com.
I love the mountains, I love the rolling hills, I love the flowers, I love the daffodils, I love the fireside when the lights are low.
Bergstrom 2.0, which is the third Monday here live, OneRadioNetwork.com. I think it's kind of a national holiday, Martin Luther King-y day. So no mail or banking or whatever. Half the government's off, 800,000 people are off anyway, so they're having fun. If you'd like to be on the show, patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. And Adam's blogs are up and about, and his two websites are Sunsink Nutrition, $99 for the rest of your life. And that counts, Adam, I guess, even if you live to 144, right?
There you go. The longer, the better.
Are you having a midlife crisis if you're 77? You should be just right at that midlife crisis.
I think I'm going to get that at 120.
That's
my midlife crisis.
So you really do. You feel good and what is your aspect and your just kind of a philosophy about longevity? I mean, have you really thought about your body and how long you'd like to stick around, and what's your theory on it?
Balance, I think. You know, look at someone like Betty White, who eats junk food, and she's 97, just had her 97th birthday,
you said that the
anniversary
other day.
Of the big quake in California, by
That's
the way.
That's funny.
So, but yeah, a lot of people, even you mentioned Jane Wyatt, you know, confusing her with Betty White. Well, she lived to 96 too. So I think the secret of a lot of people is they have a satisfying life. And so many people don't have satisfying lives. Mm-hmm. They're in bad relationships. They're in bad jobs. And many people, their job is like the frog. Whether it's true or not about a frog being put in a boiling water or in water warm, and then it gets hotter and hotter and they don't get out of it. Well, I found a lot of people who say they love their jobs, but they really hate them inside. And if you muscle test them for the job or you body douse them, then you find a whole other thing that they really have talked themselves into enjoying their job because they feel that they have no choice. And people who have smaller choices phase themselves out quickly. Even Charlie Munger, who's 95, he says a judge will live a lot longer than a lawyer because the lawyer is under stress to prove his case and the judge gets to judge him. So judges tend to live very long lives,
right?
And lawyers tend to have very short lives and use a lot of drugs and cigarettes to keep themselves going to win their cases.
Yeah. Look at you know, isn't it funny how Supreme Court justices, they seem to be some of the most long-lived people ever. That might play right into what you said, and they're just like top of the pecking order when it comes to getting the judge stuff. Isn't that interesting?
I think Charlie Munger got that right. And of course, he has lots of choices. He just donated millions of dollars to the University of California, Santa Barbara, including, what, 1,800-acre farm to them, or ranch or whatever it is. 1,800 acres is a lot of acreage for Santa Barbara.
Munger is just a big time. He's an investment guy, isn't he, Munger?
Yeah, he's Warren Buffett's partner.
Oh, they're that's, yeah. I knew who that was, yeah. Yeah.
You know, they have stock in Coca-Cola and Geico and all the major companies, See's Candy, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, McDonald's, they're big. I know that they're McDonald's. Also, Wells Fargo, they got a big stake in Wells Fargo Bank.
Yep.
And that bank keeps making really dumb decisions. They're getting in trouble every time you turn around, Wells Fargo. I wonder how Warren thinks about that when he sees that in the paper. Oh, well. This is a fun question from Chris. I really like at my hippie food store, as Patrick calls them, some organic chocolate-covered coffee beans, and I like to have a few every now and then in the morning. Just gives me a little lift. What does Adam think the difference is if you're just eating a coffee bean that's not been cooked, or if you're actually cooking the coffee? That's an interesting question.
You know, I don't think it's toxic, and according to O'Donnell Lay, they're very good for your teeth to have in your mouth. That a raw coffee bean in your mouth was actually therapy for the teeth. And there is oxalic acid in coffee. Now, oxalic acid isn't all bad. Again, we often say, oh, it's bad, it causes kidney stones. And indeed, too much can. But when you eat oxalic acid at the correct time, morning, noon, and night, and don't take excessive amounts of it, it becomes a therapy. All foods that work on the teeth usually have oxalic acid in it, like chocolate, cocoa, coffee, rhubarb. All of those things have oxalic acid, and they've been known to be beneficial for your teeth for decades.